NFL Championship Weekend is finally here, and boy, do we have some amazing matchups, along with the coaching carousel that is the NFL. Good God, the drama is high. High, especially in Florida. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast, powered by Power 818 Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Chris Kostich. With me, CJ Medeiros, and special guest, host of the Squawking Eagles podcast, Mike Wartonby, here to talk about all football-related news, especially in the coaching department, as well as his Eagles being in the NFC Championship game against his NFC East rival, the Washington Commanders. Mike, thank you for joining us here today.
Chris, CJ, it's great to be back on the podcast again here. It's, again, talking about the Eagles, and again, it's another little Super Bowl run, so it's exciting to be able to do that.
Always exciting when that happens, but we're going to save all the Eagles chatter for a little bit later, unfortunately, as breaking news from today, Pete Carroll signing a three-year deal with the Raiders as the new head coach, and this was news that kind of came out of nowhere. You kind of didn't realize Pete Carroll was still in the head coaching block of guys that could be signed out of the blue. And this guy's what, like 74 years old, 3-year deal. In my eyes, this is probably the only thing he's going to have left in the tank. But regardless,
I was surprised.
Yeah. I would assume everyone was. CJ, I'm assuming you were pretty surprised.
Well, I originally heard the Bears were interested in him. I don't know. I thought the Bears were going to get him because I thought Ben Johnson was going to go somewhere else. Raiders, ironically, because, you know, he liked Tom Brady. But that was pretty much it. Once the Bears vacancy was filled, I didn't expect him to go anywhere.
Yeah. And with Pete Carroll's age, I feel like that once these 3 years are done, like, he'll retire and finally be done with coaching. But I mean, for Pete Carroll and him being his age, he is pretty healthy and active and looks great for being 74 years old or whatever the hell his age is as well. But I'm thinking 3 years and he retires, and maybe he gets the Raiders up to speed in 3 years for whoever comes next.
That's what it looks like. You know, this is like, you know, give them credibility, I would say, you know, and it could be the Tom Brady effect where, you know, he can lure, you know, big name player, you know, big name coaches out of retirement and, you know, kind of jumpstart a franchise that's been pretty much poverty for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Anything else we want to add to this? Or because honestly, I feel like that's basically cut and dry everything that.
Yeah, it's a good move. It's a good move for the Raiders. Yeah, it gives them legitimacy.
Exactly.
I have a quick thought on this. Basically, obviously the Raiders aren't going to win a Super Bowl in the next 3 years, barring a dramatic turnaround. But I would say Pete Carroll is as close to a bridge coach or a stopgap head coach as you can get. Because I'm going to tell you this. Since the Raiders hired John Gruden in, like, what, 2018, like, since they did that, they have been an organization in disarray. You remember the Gruden-Mayock era?
Yeah.
You know, then you had the Antonio Pierce, Josh McDaniels, that win Sandy run with Rich Bisaccia, where they didn't keep him. Yeah, so Carroll, I wouldn't say you're competing for a Super Bowl with him, but I would tell you that he's a return to normalcy.
Right. Competency. They're going to become more competent. Yeah.
He's basically there to clean up the mess. Once the 3 years are done, like Chris mentioned, he'll probably retire. And then you're going to basically start off with a clean slate. This is just to get you back on track. You're not trying to win. You're trying to undo the clown show that has happened since you hired Gruden.
Yeah. And unfortunately, like, the Gruden hiring was a good, Gruden's still a really good coach, and the work that you see him do on social media, it's like, get him a coaching job, get him another coaching job.
But he might be too much of a psycho to be able to coach a team. Like his ability to be like that kind of mentality and coaching might have passed him by. Like the league is different now. The league isn't like olden days when he was, you know, coach for the first time he was with the Raiders.
You know, when Al Davis it's was different still alive.
Now. Yeah, Al Davis was still alive when his first reign with the Raiders is different.
I'm sorry, I didn't know. That's but okay. I'm just saying, one thing that does concern me, though, as far as your point on Gruden, is you remember how he exited the league.
Yeah.
Whatever team's going to inherit that, and especially something that he said, that's a PR nightmare, and they have.
Yeah, that's the other problem, too. He's also still in litigation with the league. Now, that's coming back to mind, but it's unfortunate.
I like him with Barstool. Yeah. He does these whole whiteboard things, and he has great stories still, and it's fun to hear his stories because they're insane. They're in some insane stories. So
I love the story that just came out when he was on the podcast with Taylor Lewin and Will Compton. And they asked him what coach he enjoyed battling the most, and he said Andy Reid, and it's more because of their time working at the Packers under Mike Holmgren.
Yeah.
And basically it was just in terms of like whose plays got installed that week, and Andy Reid's would go for like 6 or 8 yards, very effective plays, and he'll have like a little chip on his shoulder. And then one week Gruden had his plays installed and they went for like touchdowns or like big plays that sealed the game. And Mike Holmgren ended up handing him the game ball. And he goes over to Andy Reid's like, game ball or whatever. And very, very funny, very awesome story.
Yeah. Yeah. His stories are great. And he told stories about, he listened to WIP in Philadelphia and people call in and talk about him. And he's like, this, and then they show up at the field and screaming at him at the field and then just give him a finger. There's some really crazy stories.
Oh yeah. Moving on, Aaron Glenn named head coach for the Jets. And with that, they also hired a new GM as well. The Broncos assistant GM, Darren Mogi, just getting hired earlier today. Aaron Glenn was hired named the new head coach a couple days ago. I'm blanking on which day it was. Probably was Wednesday or Thursday. But Aaron Glenn. But Aaron Glenn, named new head coach, coming back to New York, played cornerback for the Jets, and has kind of seen it both sides. He was cornerback for the Jets when they sucked and was there when Bill Parcells got there for a big turnaround, then was with the Texans when the Texans franchise first started getting going, when they sucked. So he's kind of seen it all and is a guy that when he started coaching, worked through the ranks of first being a scout and all the way up to being the defensive coordinator for the Lions. And obviously, never mind his work being the D coordinator for the Lions and coaching up a lot of amazing talent on that side of the football, but dealing with all the injuries. Of course, we're going to talk about the injuries on that side of the football for the Lions, because that's been the storyline for the last season and a half, or last half of the season for Detroit. And making it so that they're still helping them still be a 15-win team. But of course, the injuries finally caught up to them. But all in all, in terms of coaching hires in the last however many years for the Jets, this is probably a top two coaching hire that they've had, besides maybe Robert Saleh, but that was just a mess from beginning to end. So obviously, I hate the Jets, but hoping Aaron Glenn does a solid job.
Yeah, I've got a couple of friends who are Jets fans, and you know, it's a solid choice, but they're very scarred after this past couple of years with Aaron Rodgers and Zach Wilson. So the whole Saleh debacle, I guess you would call it. This is a good call for them. This is a good call. It's a solid call. It's this guy who knows the Jets. He scouted for the Jets. He played for the Jets. Like, this is a good call. And I like, you know, they as Jets fans have no opinion at the moment because they're just kind of getting over this year. But I tell him it's a good call for them. He's got experience with bringing dog teams out of the gutter. So
exactly. CJ?
I like the pick. I just I taking off the Pats fan hat and putting on a football fan hat, I'm so scared for this dude because it's the Jets.
Yeah.
And what the Jets need is a new owner, because honestly, I don't think Saleh was a bad head coach, and I don't think Joe Douglas was a bad GM. The Jets also hired a new GM, Darren Moge or whatever, from the Broncos, who was their assistant GM. And all this news, by the way, for those listening, is on our Instagram page. Go check that out. If you do, you're very generous. But I digress. The thing is, how long till Woody Johnson throws another fit and tosses Aaron Glenn out on the curb? And Glenn has to do a bit of cleanup duty, because you're going to have to make a choice. If you stay the course with Aaron Rodgers, then Garrett Wilson's going to demand a trade. Or if you tell Aaron Rodgers, pack up your shrooms and get out, then what? Then is it back on the QB carousel for you? Probably, because you don't have because there are only two quarterbacks, in my humble opinion, worth going in the first round of this draft. And if you're the Jets, unless you swing a trade, which I highly doubt, you will have neither of them. And for Glenn, I think he fits the culture for the Jets. You know, real gritty, defensive-minded. Not Robert Saleh's flash, all-gas, no-breaks defense, but gritty, punch you in the mouth, kick you while you're down, going to the Dan Campbell School of biting kneecaps defense. And I think he's got the right mentality. I think he's got the experience. He's got, you know, like you mentioned, he worked his way up. He's worked his way to every level. Like, I think that's what you want. However, I know it's not an analytical argument, but it's also the Jets. And I think he could be a good head coach. I really do. I don't think he's with the right organization.
Yeah, I would have loved to see Rex Ryan come and coach them. Yeah. I would have loved to see that again.
Oh, my God.
The minute that he said, man, I'm hoping to, when Vrabel got hired, he was on the NFL live desk and saying, man, I hope I get the chance to kick his ass two times. I was really, really hoping he was going to get the Jets job just to shove it right back in his face.
Yeah. And Aaron Glenn's looking at a complete rebuild at this point. You know, new GM, they're going to want to bring in all their new players, their players. They're not going to want to keep these guys. So I think they should let, Aaron Rodgers kick stones and go to the Vikings, because, you know, complete the script, or Brett Favre to the Vikings, Aaron Rodgers to the Vikings. That's what I want to happen.
History loves to repeat itself.
It would be a chef's kiss. Complete. Yeah. It would be complete.
But by the sounds of it, it sounds like the Jets are cleaning house anyways.
Yeah.
So I think by just from recent reports, even before the season ended, that they're going to clean house, and that Rodgers is most likely going to be out once the Super Bowl passes by anyways. So see what happens with that. Okay. Other news from today, Bobby Slowik out as offensive coordinator for the Texans, a struggling offensive performance this season for the Texans via Ian Rappaport. Moving on from Bobby Slowik after an up-and-down offensive season, despite reaching the divisional round, Coach D'Amico Ryan's hopes for more, and the offensive line coach Chris Strasser is also out for, well, good reason, because the Texans couldn't keep Stroud on his feet for more than two plays at a time, especially when you look at the last three plays of last week's game against the Chiefs. I mean, there's not much you can do when you send an all out, when you have to deal with an all out blitz from Kansas City on three straight plays, because that's what Spagnuolo does. Yeah. And that's what he's best at, calling very deep, timely blitzes at certain points of games to help get a win. But if you're Slowik, you probably would have liked to see at least one more year with not a beat up and battered offense like the Texans had to deal with all season long. Like, look at the beginning of the season. They were without Nico Collins for almost 2 months. Then all of a sudden they get hit with Stephon Diggs being out for the year with a torn ACL. And then Tank Dell tearing basically everything but the skin in his knee. Yeah. And now he's going to be out for most likely the 2025 season. So
yeah, that's pretty bad.
I feel like at the same time, this was probably going to be expected just because of the way things shaped out. And just ended up seeing CJ Stroud digress a little bit, but maybe this is the move that the Texans need to get to where they need to be for next season.
I think it's a little bit unfair for a guy who he had a great season with CJ the year before, correct? Like he was the same guy.
Pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure he was. And so the fact that, you know, the guy loses his job because players can't be healthy, can't stay healthy. I'm not sure. I think I would have given the guy another year with Stroud. You know, again, consistency is important, especially with quarterbacks. If you're consistently have the same guy, it will show growth. And yeah, he digressed this year because, you know, defensive change. They see what he was doing last year and they adjust it. And it's also the organization's job to put pieces around their quarterback to keep him upright, to keep him being able to facilitate. And if you don't, you know, you can't fire the quarterback. So I guess you got to fire the next best thing. And that's the offensive coordinator. It's a shame that that's how things work, but I would have given him another year at least.
Yeah, I probably would have as well. CJ, would you have given Slowik another year?
I'm on the fence, and I'll tell you why. Because I liken this Texans team to their AFC South counterpart, the Jacksonville Jaguars from a season ago. Where, see, here's the thing. The Texans started out pretty solid, right? But they were only solid in the win-loss column. Which, sure, they say that's all that matters, but I'm sorry. The stat sheet told a different tale. The final scores told a different tale. How these weren't blowouts. These were like one score down to the wire nail biters. They just didn't, even when they were all healthy right at the beginning of the year, Chris, you remember you, me, and Adam talking about this. They just didn't pass the eye test. And I'm sorry. I know they say the eye test doesn't matter. I'm a firm believer that it does. And they, like I said, they just didn't pass the eye test. They looked sluggish. They looked less explosive. And they just weren't getting it done. Like I said, they weren't routinely walloping teams like they were. Like, the defense got better. We got to remember, on paper, and I know football games are well on paper, but the offense looked really, really just off. Like I said, defense looked good, but especially the O-line. And once again, on paper, it's not a bad offensive line. And sure, you could say, oh, you know, CJ Stroud regressed. They figured him out. You know, teams figured him out. He had a sophomore slump. But you're the offensive coordinator. Why didn't you adjust? And they didn't adjust. They were literally running the exact same plays week in and week out. Like, the game plan didn't change. Like, their identity didn't change. They just did the same thing, and it became predictable. And at this point, it's not an inability to change. It's just a straight up, like, they didn't want to. And as far as the injuries go, why are you running the exact same playbook with backups? Why aren't you trying to accommodate them? Like, why are you giving Stephon Diggs' routes to Xavier Hutchinson? Like, that just doesn't make sense to me. And honestly, Houston never should have beaten the Chargers. I feel like that game was just more the Chargers and Justin Herbert crapping down their own leg than Houston winning. Houston, just, they self-destructed. Houston just had to stand there. And honestly, the thing is, though, with Bobby Slowik, I'll say this. When you fire a coach or a coordinator, the firing isn't as important as who you can replace them with. You better not whiff on this next hiring, because CJ Stroud has shown promise. That is I'll leave it there, because if you screw up the next hiring, then CJ Stroud is going to be unfairly blamed. Like, oh, 1 year tease. He wasn't what we thought he was. Like, no, you gotta, like, you need to ace this next hiring. I don't know what they're going to do, but let's hope they get it right.
Yeah. Sophomore slumps happen.
It does.
It happens. But year three is where year three is the answer of, all right, how do you respond out of a terrible season afterwards? Doesn't mean that I think that the Texans won't win the division next year, but it's hard to say that they're going to do anything after the way that things went down this season for them. But
I had them high picked in the offseason. I thought, you know, their signings and their trades, they added nice pieces, and I thought they were going to be a real contenders, and, you know, injuries and play calls, but. Yeah, I was disappointed by the outcome of that team.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mike. Me, CJ, and Adam, and I think Tuck as well, we all had the Texans obviously winning the South and going on to be AFC title contenders and maybe even Super Bowl contenders, but shit happens, I guess.
Yeah, like you said, it's games are won on the field, not on paper. So
yep. All right. Speaking of the Jags. Drama in Florida. Good God. Liam Cohen, stunning Bucs Nation, and named as the Jaguars head coach after they fired their GM, Trent Baalke. Now, here's the timeline of this is just insane. So the Jaguars wanted to interview Liam Cohen, and I'm pretty sure they did get an interview, but he basically said, I don't want to be a part of this Trent Baalke shit. And when Doug Peterson originally got fired on Black Monday and Baalke was going to keep his job, league sources, everyone around the league was like, how the hell do you not fire him? How the hell do you keep this guy as your GM and only fire your head coach and not do a clean sweep of the front office at that point? So Liam Cohen goes to Jacksonville, says, I'm all set unless you do this, this, and this. Goes back to Tampa, gets offered a massive deal from Tampa Bay, would have made him the highest paid coordinator in the league. Deal hadn't been signed, but it was spoken upon principle, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Baalke gets fired as a last ditch effort from Jacksonville. Cohen sees this, says, okay, I'll consider you now. Tampa Bay can't get a hold of him. And then now you got conflicting reports from Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter. Rappaport saying that the deal isn't set yet, but he's in the Jacksonville building as we speak. And Schefter saying the deal's all but said and done. And of course, us here at the Fumble Rooski podcast reported that the deal is done. I think all that's left is really getting his pen and paper if it hasn't been done already. But boy, if I'm Tampa, I'm hot. I am fucking furious. Because Cohen, like, we talk about Detroit and Houston having their injuries. Like, Tampa Bay had to deal with some injuries on the offensive side of the football as well. They lost Chris Godwin. They're without Mike Evans for 4 weeks. And Liam Cohen was able to keep the offense going and utilizing the 3-4-5 guys in the wide receiver room, as well as getting Cade Otton to be all of a sudden a top five looking like a top five tight end in the league.
They also dug up Sterling Shepard to come back and play too. So I don't know how they even pulled that off too.
And Shepard looked pretty solid as well. Liam Cohen did a pretty damn good job, and he would have been paid exactly what he was worth at Tampa Bay if he had followed through with the principal, I guess.
Yeah.
But Jesus Christ, like I said, if I'm Tampa Bay, I'm fucking furious over this.
I would agree. Like, you know, the Eagles had that Jonathan Gannon had that interview. We were talking about that earlier, that, you know, these coordinators are important. Coordinators are important. You know, some people may say, oh, just get rid of the coordinator. They are very important. And I think this coordinator was important to Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield has had like a resurgence, and I'm a big Baker Mayfield fan because he's gone through a lot, through Cleveland, through Carolina. He was a scout team for the Panthers at one point. Like, this is, and so I think Liam Cohen, he might not know what he's getting himself into in Jacksonville. They're a mess. You know, Doug Peterson did a number on them, and you know, talking from Doug Peterson, he won the Eagles' only Super Bowl. If you listen to our podcast, we don't give Doug Peterson the credit of winning that Super Bowl. We give it to somebody else, but we cannot name that name because we've sworn that we will not speak of the name who was before Doug Peterson. So we don't speak that name on our podcast anymore. We did a whole podcast just about him, and then we swore not to mention his name ever again after that. So
I could say the name probably. Yeah. Is that if I say the name?
Sure, go for it. Yeah.
Chip Kelly is what we're referring to.
Yes, we are. Yeah, referring
who's
to Chip
now,
Kelly.
Who's now doing a number over at Ohio State, by the way.
Yeah. It's one of the guys on our podcast, he's a big Oregon Duck fan, and he loves Chip Kelly, but he also hates Ohio State.
Oh.
So it's been interesting to listen to him talk about it.
Yeah. CJ, your thoughts.
First, let me just say, as far as the Eagles and that Super Bowl credit goes, and Chris can attest, Mike, I think you'll appreciate, long have I said that Peterson shouldn't get the credit for that win.
Yeah.
And I've always said, you know, there was that real spirit of being the underdog and everything, and the players were ready. They were fired up. They wanted it more. And Peterson was just along for the ride. I likened it to the Golden State Warriors dynasty, where they could do it themselves, and Steve Kerr is just kind of a placeholder.
Yeah.
No offense, Mike, I hated that whole underdog thing that you guys put on. I hated it so much.
No offense, I like in 2018 they could have won again. They just got complacent.
Yeah,
everybody was in the right place at the right time. Everybody was hitting on all cylinders at a perfect time.
True. You know? Once again, though, you and I are in agreement at least that Doug Peterson is just kind of there.
He was just a placeholder. He's a placeholder.
But as far as the Jags go, I'm going to tell you this. In the grand calculus of this Buccaneers-Jaguars entanglement, the real loser, forget Baker Mayfield, Todd Bowles, my friend, the spotlight is on you. And Chris will tell you that I've said off camera, and I think I've probably said it on camera once, that I think Todd Bowles should have been fired. There is no reason that this division should have been a nail biter.
Right.
I do not think Todd Bowles is a good head coach. His Jets experience, you know, that's pretty big, isn't it?
Yeah.
And even still, I think he's a brilliant defensive coordinator. I really do. I think he's a great defensive coordinator. But you know, sometimes you're a better coordinator than you are a coach. For example, the Patriots, you know, just hired Josh McDaniels for the 17th time. he's a good OC. Took Mac Jones to a Pro Bowl, gave New England the sixth scoring offense with basically young Kirk Cousins. And that, I'll mean that in the nice way. And, but then proceeded to crap the bed twice as a head coach. So let's not pretend that, you know, some guys have it. Let's not pretend that some guys just don't have it. Some guys have it as a head coach. Like, I think he's a great coordinator, but, you know, once again, I don't think they should have kept Todd Bowles. So without Liam Cohen, I'm not going to say Bowles' seat is getting warm. Far from it. But the kindling and the gasoline is already under his seat.
You're buying a thermometer and checking and using it to check the seat.
Yeah. But my point is, the wood's under the seat, the gas is on the seat, the match hasn't been lit yet.
But it's out.
Oh, but see, here's the thing. But everything is ready. This is like the 1950s, and every country is preparing for war, you know, with the arms race. That's what this is. Like, people, I am preparing myself for the Bucks to struggle. I don't want them to, because I like Mike Evans. I think Baker Mayfield has turned it around. But I don't know who they're going to get as their next OC, because I think that offense, was in spite of Bowles, not because of him. And I think Liam Cohen's a good coach. Then again, after two seasons with Baker Mayfield, is Liam Cohen ready to be a head coach? I'm leaning no. I think it's too early. It's only been two seasons. Yeah. And then look, say what you will about him. I don't think he's ready. I don't. Maybe that's an indictment on me. Maybe I don't know ball. And I'll be the first to admit I'm not all-knowing. But I don't think he's ready. And as far as the Jags go, don't think I don't have any scorn for you, because I do. It took you this long to fire Trent Baalke. It took Ben Johnson slamming the door in your face. And then you're just like, it's his problem. And then once Liam Cohen does it, you realize, huh, maybe we should get rid of Baalke. Like, it took you this long. Baalke has stayed out 2 or 3 years past his expiration date. He was never that great as a GM. And every Jaguars fan in the continental United States threw up their hands in celebration when they learned that the bad man could no longer hurt them.
Do you know any Jaguars fans? I really don't know any Jaguars fans.
Grant Flood.
Yeah, Grant. Yeah, he's been on the podcast like twice.
Okay. I haven't asked him about this. Maybe I should reach out to him.
He'll be fine. He'll be fine. I'm sure he's happy. Like, I'm
I think
sure
he's happy.
And he should be, because here's the thing. I said this offseason, or before, like in the final episode of like week 18 or whatever, we're talking about people we expect to get canned. I said the Jaguars are going to fire Trent Baalke. And so imagine my surprise when they didn't. I was flabbergasted, as it were. And then they finally do. It's like, well, it took you long enough. Like, this is a Jetsy move, if I'm being honest. Like, where one of the hottest head coaching prospects, you know, Ben Johnson literally slammed the door in your face, and that wasn't enough. So it took Liam Cohen, but you know, whatever. Long story short, just be happy you did. And I know Liam Cohen was their second option, and they should be thankful if the fallout wasn't worse than what it was.
Right.
Liam Cohen is a guy that I decide I kind of want to look at his experience as a coach, and not realizing he's actually a New England guy, was the in and out of coaching roles in the New England area, was the quarterback's coach over at Brown, pass game coordinator and quarterback's coach at URI, went back to Brown to be the quarterback's coach, stayed in the New England area, was the pass game coordinator and quarterback's coach in UMass for a couple of years. OC for UMaine, and then he got his NFL break as the assistant wide receivers coach and then the assistant quarterbacks coach for the Rams, OC for Kentucky, OC for the Rams, went back to Kentucky to be the OC the next season. This is all in like the Kentucky and LA shit's like a 4-year span, by the way.
Yeah.
And then went back to Tampa Bay last year, or went to Tampa Bay went to Tampa Bay in 2024 as the OC, and now as the head coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Sorry, that was a bit of a fucking mouthful, but
that's a lot of jumping around. Like, that's like zero consistency right there. Like, I'm from the old school, you know, you draft a quarterback and he waits a couple years to play. That, and you know, same thing with offensive coordinators. Let them be an offensive coordinator for 4 or 5 years with a team, and then they become a head coach. Like, but it's like that TikTok mentality. It's like, I want it now. It needs to happen now, quickly, because it's going to be gone before I can say yes, I want to it. So,
yeah,
that's where we're at, and I understand it. I don't like it, but I understand it.
Everyone's hungry for a ring, and yeah. It's because, you know, you had teams like the Patriots, for example, that ruled the league for 20 years, and is the reason why like guys like Peyton Manning or Ben Roethlisberger don't have more rings. And, you know, every single Super Bowl from like 2001 to 2019, 2018, it was only Manning, Brady, and Roethlisberger in the Super Bowl besides whoever came out of the NFC.
Right.
And then now you have the Chiefs raining hell on everyone. So I think that, you know, with the recent success of 1 to 2, like 3, maybe 4 teams, everyone's hungry to get their bite at the dinner table at this point. And they want it now.
Yeah.
That's the unfortunate, like, they can't wait any longer. Like, too many teams at this point have been strangled and riddled away from having a chance at a ring. And now they want their piece of the pie and they don't want to wait any longer.
Yeah, pretty much. They just, they're done. There's that they want it now. And if the people they have with them isn't going to do it, we'll get somebody else.
Exactly.
That's
Speaking of the Patriots,
I was going to say the Eagles wanted to get rid of Sirianni. I wanted to get rid of Sirianni week five, but during the bye, I got get rid of him. We're done. I'm done with him.
We now look, yeah, now last look. Time you were on, we were that was one of the things that we talked about. We were like, depending on how the Eagles start, could you see him be gone in the middle of the season? And that was one of the things that you said was, and that we ended up saying afterwards as well. Like we like see where they are at the bye week and. We'll see what happens.
Get him out of here, and there. I wasn't the only one. We're not the. We weren't the only ones that were wanting him gone. So
yeah,
but he's still here.
Well, he got his head screwed on kind of straight, so that works.
He went bald and did the opposite of Britney Spears. He did not go crazy.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Real quick, speaking of the Patriots, Josh McDaniels just getting hired, as CJ mentioned, for what seems like the 17th freaking time to. Coming back to the New England Patriots. And I was talking with you, Mike. I mean, if you're a Pats fan like me and CJ, this is basically everything that, like, the last 2.5 weeks is essentially everything that you wanted the Patriots to do. Not and then some. This is exactly what you wanted them to do. Like, you wanted them to get Mike Vrabel. You wanted them to get rid of Mayo. You wanted Van Pelt out. You wanted Robert Covington out. And they just got blanking on motherfucker's name now.
CJ, Terrell Williams.
Terrell Williams, new DC and for New England as well. All roads leading pretty much the right way for the Patriots. Now let's see what happens on draft day.
Right. They have a lot of I guess holes to fill, and are the right guys in place to do that?
Exactly.
The thing with McDaniels for me is I like it. Just, dude, please leave the 3rd and 10 screen passes back in Vegas. That was like the one thing that like aggravated me to no end. I remember there was a time I was watching the game with like my dad, and he and I are looking at each other. We're just like, it's 3rd and 10. Your options are A, a screen pass, B, a screen pass, and C, and probably a screen pass. And
for G, all the above.
And I'm like, well, that's it. I'm done. But yeah, that's just what it was. If he can just cut down on that, it's fine. And as far as Terrell Williams goes, you know, he's a Vrabel guy. Lions DL coach was like the one strength of theirs, even though it was riddled by injury. Because, you know, the whole defense was like a wartime hospital ward. It was not good. And yeah, that is something that I think they're fixing it well. And they kept their special teams coach, Jeremy Springer, which I think is good. He was like the only one of their coordinators that was normal.
They had a top five PFF grade in terms of special teams this year, too.
Yeah. And before we go, Chris, because, you know, I post all the news on our show. Real quick, we do want to, as far as other coordinators go, is that cool? Just rapid fire?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, so Lou Anarumo, who was fired by the Bengals, just got hired by the Colts, which, why would you do that? He commandeered a defense that single-handedly cost Joe Burrow and company a spot at the playoffs. I would say you leave his ass in the unemployment line, but they do things differently in Indy. Jim Irsay has probably been hitting the bottle again, that's why, but I don't
know. Well, this is also, well, let's not also forget, this is also the same guy that took down Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, but NFL's what have you done for me lately, league? And lately,
yeah, no, you're right. I just want to throw that out there.
No, you have a point. The Atlanta Falcons hired former Jets interim head coach and defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich as their defensive coordinator. Which, yeah, I know you can point at the Jets defense, but he was good as defensive coordinator. Then they just forced all the other crap on his plate, which I'm willing to wait for that one. The Raiders hired Bucks assistant GM John Spytek as their new GM, which that move has Tom Brady written all over it, you know, former Buck.
Yeah.
And speaking of GMs, of course, we mentioned this earlier, the Jets have hired Broncos assistant GM Darren, I think it's Mogi, as their next GM, which... solid, you know, Broncos front office seems to have done a 180. And finally, I had to touch on this coordinator hiring for last because it's my favorite. The Bengals have hired Notre Dame defensive coordinator Al Golden as their next DC. Why? But again, I shall ask, why? Did you not see Ohio State spank them? And don't get me wrong. Like, I saw the comeback. I watched the national championship like the rest of you, America. But... come on. You're telling me the defense was able to stiffen up when Ohio State was simply playing ball control football and running every play? Ooh, shiver me timbers. You're so good. Like, this is, wow, congratulations. I can see it happening again. I can see Joe Burrow leading in every category and then missing the playoffs because they just don't take defense seriously in Cincy. And if I'm Trey Hendrickson and T. Higgins and I see Al Golden coming in and I see that Zach Taylor's still the head coach, I'm running for the hills.
Well, I mean, to be fair, this is also the same defensive coordinator that took down the mighty Georgia Bulldogs and Penn State as well.
The Carson Beck?
No, Carson Beck wasn't playing. It was their backup. There was their backup, who was debatably better than Carson Beck. I would argue that he is better than Carson Beck.
Chris, you haven't been a quarterback forever, and you're better than Carson Beck. That's not a high
bar.
Carson Beck's going to Miami now, so it really doesn't matter what he did in Georgia.
Yeah, but still, my point is, it's like, I don't know. I don't like that jump. I don't like that hiring. That's pretty much it, lightning round, essentially. All right.
Well, we're going to wrap the coaching carousel up because we still have the championship weekend ahead of us. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into the NFC championship game, the Eagles and the Commanders. This is the Fumble Risky Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
This is Fumble Risky Podcast. Chris Kostich, CJ Madero, special guest from the Squawking Eagles podcast. Host of said Squawking Eagles podcast, Mike Wartenby. As breaking news for Patriots fans, Jabril Peppers has been found not guilty on all assault charges.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just want to throw that out there. I don't want to talk about it.
The people have spoken.
People have spoken. NFC Championship, the Eagles and the Commanders. Boy, what an unlikely run for the Commanders. And I wanted to start this segment by asking you, Mike.
Yeah.
I want you to take all the NFC East rivals that you have, the Cowboys, the Giants, and the Commanders. I want you to rank them on a scale of 1 to 10 of how much you hate those three teams. Save the Commanders for last for me as well.
Okay, please. So if we're doing a scale of 1 to 10, Cowboys 10, we hate the Cowboys no matter what. You know, everything the Cowboys do, we just despise.
I would have expected you to go above 10 on that, honestly.
I would love to go by 10. Yeah, I would love to. But I'll stay within my restraints. You know, 1 to 10. You know,
respectful. 1 to 10. Respectful.
Yes, yeah. Understood. Yeah, I told you earlier, I have a friend who's a Cowboys fan, but he's also a pastor. And
it's
very hard to speak ill will of somebody who's also so close to God. You got to give it to him because he's still a Cowboys fan. You know, and it's his fault that he's still a Cowboys fan. It's a shame. but we do not like the Cowboys. I hate the Cowboys so much that I will not like bet for the Cowboys to win. No matter who they were playing, when I do my parlays, Cowboys are gotta lose that week. No matter what. I'll lose money rather than have the Cowboys win a game. So that's where I'm at.
And that's not understandable. I get it.
Yeah. It's, you know, the worst fan, the worst Cowboys fan is a Cowboys fan born in Northeast Philadelphia. Those are the worst Cowboys fans because they're also New York Yankees and Lakers fans too.
Yeah.
100%. New York Giants. We just hate the Giants. Just hate the Giants. But now that they were so kind to give Saquon Barkley to the Eagles, pretty much they just handed him over. Gotta love the Giants for that. You can't fault them for that. And it was nice of them. It was nice of them. And the Commanders. For a long time we kind of care less about the Commanders, the Redskins, the Washington Football Team, whatever you wanted to call them. I didn't have a giant hatred to them as much as the Cowboys or the Giants, because they were kind of like blah. Like they're just, it was Dan Snyder kind of just drove the team to the ground. There was a time where they had McNabb for a while, they had DeSean Jackson for a while. It was nice to see that, but now that the Commanders are talking the way they're talking about how they're gonna hit Jalen Hurts and we're gonna hit him like he was a running back, that hatred is kind of peaking, kind of starting to come to the top now, and they're gonna start earning my hatred soon.
Well, I mean, did you expect anything else from Washington? Because Jalen Hurts does run like a quarterback. Running back.
Yeah, I know. I'm not surprised. But
yeah, I mean, I just feel like that doesn't need to be broadcasted, though. It's like breaking news. Football team vows to play football. I get it. Because look, let's be real. We watch certain quarterbacks run and certain quarterbacks try to sell for penalties. So it's at least refreshing that, it's like, oh, no, we're going to treat you like any other player. Okay. So that's nice. Of course, if they do win this game, that won't work on some quarterbacks, but it's nice.
Yeah. It doesn't, if the past will repeat itself, teams that say things about what they're going to do to the Eagles doesn't really work out for them in the end.
True.
They decorated the Rocky statue.
I was just about to bring that up.
Don't do it. It doesn't end well. I'll tell you right now, it doesn't end well. Jared Verse last week saying how much he hates Eagles fans. He hates the colors. And what's the image we have? Saquon running into the end zone and him trying to chase him down. It doesn't end well.
Jared Verse still had a solid game. I actually wanted.
He did.
I mean, in the last week, this time last week, I'm just gonna assume what is going on through Mike Warmby's mind real quick.
Sure.
Last week, you're probably thinking, all right, if things go the way that we expect it to go, then we're going to Detroit next Sunday and having to deal with the Detroit crowd and going to be a raucous home field that we're going to have to deal with. And then all of a sudden Saturday night comes along, like 11:30 on Saturday night comes along, and you're like, holy shit, we might actually have a home playoff game. We still have to get through the Rams.
All right.
And whatever the time, 6 o'clock Sunday, you're like, wow.
Another home game. Gotta love it.
Way of miracle. We have ourselves another home playoff game.
Yeah. Where I was at was I knew the Eagles were going to make it to the NFC Championship game, and I knew it was going to be in Detroit. That's what it was going to be. They would have to go through Detroit to get there. But Detroit threw, five turnovers, gave up 500 yards to the Commanders. I'm like, okay, that's that. Now the Commanders are coming to come here. I tell you right now, the Eagles are not going to have 5 turnovers against the Commanders.
No.
And the Eagles defense isn't going to let up 500 yards to the Commanders. So it's going to be a very different game.
So that was the next question I wanted to get at as well. So looking at this being the third time that these two teams have faced off, splitting both games, first time around was in Philly. And that was more of a slobber knocker. That was more of a defensive slugfest. Washington had the lead for the majority of the game. And then Philly finally, fourth quarter, broke it open. Saquon did what he does best.
Yep.
Second time around, more of a shootout. And you didn't have Jalen Hurts for the majority of that game. CJ Gardner-Johnson got tossed as well. And this was the real, offensive rookie of the year defining moment for Jaden Daniels and winning that game 35-34. And to be honest, just from listening to other people talk about this game, I think that's going to have to be the way that the Commanders are going to have to win, is putting up 30 plus points on Philly to be able to get the job done. But with that being said, they still have to stop and hope to contain Saquon. And I mean, you watch all the freaking, you've watched all 18 games, whatever the number is at this point.
17.
What have you seen from this Eagles team that's like, by some way that other teams could potentially stop Saquon? If not stop, contain him.
You know, the only thing that stopped Saquon from running was Eagles fans. The one week where Eagles fans like, why isn't Jalen throwing the ball? Why can't Jalen throw the ball? They can't win by throwing the ball. And they came out the week, and I think Saquon had like 68 yards rushing, and Jalen Hurts picked apart the Steelers and had a 10-minute drive to end the game. Like, yeah, the Eagles can do a lot of things. They were like number one rush offense in the league, but also the last in passing. Well, we're thinking is if you run the ball, you win the game. You if you control the ball by running the ball, you win the game majority of the time. But I don't think teams can stop Saquon. There's nobody that can really stop Saquon. You can try to contain him, but I don't think you could stop him. And just he's on a path this year that hasn't been seen in quite a long time. The last running back to run like he did and win a Super Bowl was Terrell Davis, and he did it back to back years, and those were back to back Super Bowls for the Broncos. I don't think the Washington Commanders can stop Saquon, and if they want to, well, the Eagles have a lot of passing threats between Goddard and Brown and Devontae Smith, so. I don't see it happening.
I think that the only way you can really stop Saquon from breaking out a long one is to prevent it being a very long one, if that makes sense. Like, because you're going to expect Saquon to break out at least three times for maybe call it 20-yard rushes. I think that if Washington's going to win this game, you contain how long these big breakout rushes are and prevent them from turning it into a touchdown at that point.
Agreed.
Make them work up the field. And as you mentioned, Philly does not make many mistakes at all. But if Washington is able to make them make mistakes on these long drives, which is probably going to be few and far between, then they're going to be able to really keep this a close game. Mm-hmm. Now a lot of people also say Philly's going to have their way with Washington. With that, Washington has, like, the only time they've been blown out and lost by more than one score was week one against Tampa. I say this over and over again. Washington is going to play the same way that they played the last two times against Philly.
Yeah.
Whether it be, it's going to be a rough defensive game in Philly like it was the first time around, or it's going to be a high scoring affair like it was in Washington the second time around.
Well, and sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, you're good.
When they played Washington, when Jalen Hurts got hurt, that game was the Eagles needed to lose that game. They needed to, because if they had won that game, they would have to win like, I think it was like 18 games in a row to get to the Super Bowl, and that wasn't going to happen. They actually needed that loss to actually prepare them for this last run to the Super Bowl. That's not going to happen. They're not going to put up 30 points against the Eagles on Sunday. It's going to be definitely less, and it's definitely going to be a loss for the Commanders, in my mind.
This is where we get into our picks. If I'm a betting man, I'm definitely betting the Commanders spread plus 6 or whatever it is now. I think it's gone up now.
It might have gone up.
I wouldn't be surprised, but I'm betting Commander spread. I don't care. This is going to be a one score game, whether it be 27-19, like it was round one, or 35-34 round two, betting Commander spread. If they win, boy, I think everyone's dream Super Bowl that's outside of Philly and Kansas City is Commanders versus Bills. But I would love to see the Commanders win this game just for history reasons, because we've never seen a rookie quarterback in the Super Bowl, never mind win one. But I would love it just for the history aspect. But the way that the Eagles are playing, it's hard to pick against them. And I know I was joking with CJ this entire week too, that I was just like, I can't wait for Mike to get on the podcast. I'm going to pick the Commanders right in his fucking face.
I even made a meme about it.
He did make a meme about it.
It just says Chris on his way to pick the Commanders in front of him. Like, it's just this cat walking us. My legs are sweating.
But I was thinking about it. I was like, you know what? Washington's a team of destiny. But this, the whole thing with the rookie quarterback having never made a Super Bowl also just sticks in my mind as well. And I feel like the trend is going to continue. Doesn't mean I don't think Washington isn't going to put up a good game, but I think that the Eagles are due to go back to the Super Bowl. So give me the Eagles.
Nice. good choice.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot, you know, like you said, history with no rookie quarterback, but there's also history can be made where the fact that I'm rooting for the Bills to beat the Chiefs, because to have an Eagles Bills Super Bowl, and you know, of course, I'm going to pick the Eagles to win that Super Bowl. The Bills will go down in history as the only team to lose to a whole division in the Super Bowl.
Hmm. I actually never thought about it that way.
They would have lost to the Giants. They've lost to the Giants. They lost to the Cowboys. They've lost to Washington. They have not lost to the Eagles in the Super Bowl. This would be history in the making.
Because they lost to the Giants once.
Dallas twice. Washington and the Giants. Yeah.
Yep.
Four straight years.
Jeez. Yeah. That's how you spell Bills, right? B-I-L.
Yeah. CJ, your pick.
The way I see it is I agree with you, Mike, that it's gonna, I don't see any in between. There's gonna be a fireworks show or it's just gonna be a defensive rock fight. I'm leaning more towards the former for one reason. It's a divisional game. And don't let the fact that it's the NFC Championship game fool you. This is still a divisional game. And those are notorious for having weird stuff happen. Even though it's still a divisional game, the lights are bright, are they not? They are. I lack the words for this, if I'm being honest. Like, it's a divisional game on steroids. This isn't a game to decide the division. This is a game basically to decide the fate of the NFC. Who's going to represent it? It's in the link. Crowds going wild. Washington, you know, like I said, team of destiny. Philly just, you know, is ground and pound, as tough as ever. This is going to be cinema, I tell you what. So when I just have to look at everything, there are some things that are going to be different. For both sides. For Philly, you're not playing in a blizzard anymore. A blizzard that pretty much neutralized the Rams' strong passing attack. Because, you know, the Rams are a dome team. You know, well, let's be real. And I said that when I picked Philly to beat them. And the weather, like I said, it's not going to be this crazy snowstorm blizzard type thing. No. So the great equalizer might be the moderately okay equalizer. But for Washington, you're not playing a really banged up defense. Because I had said earlier in the episode, Detroit's defense, like the injury bug hit Detroit, but hit one side of the ball, right? It was all defense.
Yeah.
And I don't see Jaden Daniels being able to do all of that on a completely healthy defense. And Philly obviously having a great defense in their own right. And I like Jaden Daniels as a rookie. I think he's Offensive Rookie of the Year. It's unprecedented. He could make history, but I just think the lights are going to be a little too bright for him. And for Philly, I got Philly. That's what it is. And I know for Washington, I said the motto for them should be act like you've been there. But heck, we had a whole episode named Act Like You've Been There.
Yes, we did.
But for Philly, okay, so cool. Washington, like I said, act like you've been there. But Philly has actually been there. Nick Sirianni has actually been there. Jalen Hurts has actually been there. And when you look at the defensive side of the ball, you got Quinion Mitchell, you got Cooper DeJean, Darius Slay. I just, and Washington, it's really just Terry McLaurin. And I like McLaurin. I think he's good. And I like Jaden Daniels, but it's just Philly on defense has too many ways to shut you down. And if you're going to win this game, you're going to need it to be probably without Terry McLaurin. Because if I'm defensive coordinator Vic Fangio, I'm doubling him every play, and you have the ability to do that. You know, put C.J. Gardner-Johnson over the top of Mitchell, shadow him. And also for Commanders, your first order of business is stopping Saquon Barkley. Do they have the horses too? Bobby Wagner's playing out of his mind. Frankie Louvu is pretty good. He got Daron Payne still, but Philly is still one of the best O-lines in the game with Mailata, Dickerson, Juergens, Becton, and Johnson. You just got those mammoths up front, and I just think Saquon, I'm not going to say he's going to feast. I think the Commanders are going to get their licks in, but I still think victory is going to go to Saquon, like on the majority of drives. And I'm not going to say it's going to be a stomping, because like I said, I think the Commanders just in general are going to get their licks in, but I got Philly probably by, I'm not going to say a two-score game, maybe like 8 points, maybe, you know. But either way, I still think the game is Philly's to lose, and I still expect them to win. Not a drubbing, but probably a game where you have it's going to be one of those games where it's close, but Philly has control throughout. Like, it's their game to lose. They kind of, like, the Commanders were always going to be nipping at their heels, but Philly's just going to, you know, just put the game out of reach probably in the fourth quarter.
Well, that's what the Eagles have done all year. They've kind of grinded defenses down the first and second quarter. They haven't put points up in that first quarter, really, but once halftime rolls around, Saquon Barkley, if you just take his second half yardage, he's like third in the running back in rushing yards in the NFL. So he gets all of his yards after the beat down the offensive line has already put on that defensive line. But if you want to flip the sides and the Eagles defense, Jalen Carter is going to be going up against a backup with the Commanders guard.
Yeah. Sam Cosmi done for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and the other guard too is a backup as well that I think he came in a week or two ago. You know, the Eagles defensive line with Milton Williams and Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter and Ojomo, really, it's they're gonna be ready to go. Like Jalen Carter, he's on the cusp of greatness. I see it. He's going to be a great player. As long as he keeps his head straight and doesn't get into trouble, which we've seen his past in college, but I think he's going to be great. And he has history with Jaden Daniels. He has history with him when playing at LSU. So it's going to be interesting to see what that defense can do and disturb what Daniels does. I know Daniels has been doing a lot of virtual reality, but in virtual reality, you don't get hit. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens when he does get hit.
VR and no girls.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if that's the combination that's going to is the combination or the recipe to defeat the Eagles. I'm not sure if that's it or not. I don't think it is.
From what I've heard, the VR has worked because the way that he's doing VR, I think, if I read it correctly, he's got the VR set up where it's like he's seeing things faster than what he would be in real life. So everything's coming at him and he has to make a lot more faster reactions. So I think that's been the major, obviously, like you said, you can't get hit in VR and whatnot. You can't simulate that. You can simulate pressure, but you can't simulate actually getting hit, but he is having like coverages, the way the defense is moving around at a more faster pace. So I think that's more of what has been leading to the success of Jaden.
Yeah. It's definitely a part of his success. Again, this also Jaden Daniels, he's also a former Eagles fan. You know, he was a Donovan McNabb fan, so that's why he wears number 5. So he does have something. Yeah, so he definitely, yeah, Yeah, he wants to – I'm sure he wants to beat the Eagles. He wants to prove that, you know, he's the guy. But the Eagles do have – they are a very talented team depth-wise too. So, you know, and they don't make a lot of mistakes. You know, a lot of the mistakes they happened when they played Washington and lost. I predicted they were going to lose that game. They needed to lose that game. And this is not a game that they're going to lose. You know, and I predicted, you know, like a 10-point win for the Eagles, at least.
I like it. It should be a very fun matchup, to say the least, along with what's going to be coming out as the main event of the night. The Chiefs and the Bills are going to be talking about that on the other side of the break. This is the Full Maruski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
This is the Full Maruski Podcast by Power88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. Chris Kostich, CJ Medeiros, and very special guest from the Squawking Eagles Podcast, Mike Wartenby. As we just got through our Eagles and Commanders preview, now on to the Chiefs and the Bills. Eagles Commanders at 3:30. Chiefs and Bills at 6:30. Please, Josh Allen, please, for the love of Jesus Christ, please save us. Please save us. Good God, please. If the Bills don't win this game, and I'm with America on this one as well, like I will be happy with a Bills and Eagles Super Bowl. I will not be happy with a Chiefs Eagles Super Bowl. No offense, Mike. I will not be happy.
I wouldn't be happy with it. I don't want to see that either.
I just don't want the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, period. Don't really care who wins. Because I mean, at this point, you're like, oh, respect greatness. Like, no, I won't. It's manufactured and you know it.
Yeah. All right. Keys to the game for the Bills, in my opinion. If they want to win this game, they have to let Josh Allen just fly. They just have to unhook the leash that they had him on last week in against Baltimore and just let him fucking go. They just got to let him go, because especially in the second half of that game, they played way too conservative. And if this is a one score game going into the fourth quarter, they're not winning this game. They have to, if the Bills want to win this game, they have to punch Kansas City in the mouth and they have to step on their throat and keep stepping on it and not look back for all 60 minutes. There is no way in hell this Bills team is going to get the job done if this is a one score game going into the fourth quarter. Because this isn't like with the Commanders, like if you're picking the Commanders, that's just based off of feeling. Like Jaden Daniels is a feeling. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs is a fact. They are inevitable. I can't stress that enough. Like if the Bills win this, besides if they end up winning the Super Bowl, this will be probably the most, what's the word I'm looking for? You want to forget it.
Say that again.
The most satisfying win in Buffalo history, I would say.
Well, that's the problem. Like this could be the Bills Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And them winning this game is, and then going to the Super Bowl, it may be a letdown for them.
Yeah.
And that's what I think it is.
Fun fact as well. So in the last 10 matchups that these two teams have faced off, both teams have won 5 games. Both teams have put up same amount of points against each other. And the same amount points against.
Wow.
Insane. And of course, as we all know, Bills, all their wins in the last 5 years have come in the regular season, but not getting it done in the playoffs against the Chiefs. They have been the Bills boogeyman. This is the time where Buffalo gets the job done. This is their time. I don't care if I don't like Buffalo. I just can't stand another Mahomes Super Bowl right now. I just need something different. I just need it. For the love of God, please let it be the Bills. And I think fate will be on the Bills' side on Sunday. When we come around on Tuesday at 2 o'clock or whatever the hell we're going to record the episode on Tuesday, I hope to Jesus that we are talking about the Bills beating the Chiefs and going to the Super Bowl. That's the only thing I ask for. That is the only thing.
I'm with you, Chris. I don't want to see a Patrick Mahomes Super Bowl because of this whole, you know, referee favoritism and how he came out and said, yeah, he did flop when he went out of bounds. Okay, yeah, we all know you are. It's evident that you're doing this. And the NFL is just looking the other way. And I do hope the Bills have it in them to beat the Chiefs. I just do. And I know it's going to be hard because they're going to be in Kansas City. And that fan base is rowdy. They're loud. It's a loud stadium. And there's a lot of ghosts and a lot of skeletons in the Bills lockers that go back more than just the Chiefs. You know, all those lost Super Bowls, all that stuff. There's a lot of history with the Bills. And so can they silence all of that? And we're going to have to wait and see, but I hope they can.
CJ, your pick?
Wait, so Mike, did you pick KC or Buffalo?
Buffalo. Oh, yeah, Mike. Yeah.
Definitely Buffalo.
Oh, boy. Like Chris, I got the same strategy. This is one of those times where you want to get into a shootout. The KC offense is sluggish. Come out, sling the rock. The way to beat the Chiefs is to disrespect them. You don't respect Trent McDuffie. Don't respect Chris Jones. The Chiefs defense and Steve Spagnuolo, they're smoke and mirrors. They're just a lot of smoke and noise is what they are. You have to march right up to them, spit in their face and say, may the better man win. I don't respect you. Let's go. Because too many offenses play the game where you try to avoid them. But I've noticed when you run the ball right at them, when you force them to play defense, you know, when you force them to react, they tend to fall apart. That's how Buffalo beat them the first time. They marched right up to them and said, I'm not scared of you. And that defense, I'm sure you remember, gave up 30 points. They wilted. And every time a team, like I said, you just can't let them get in your head. Every time a team just said, no, I'm not scared of you, it was close. Like all their closest games were when teams just attack. That's what you have to do. You have to go on the attack. Then you got to look at Mahomes and say, all right, the ball's in your court. This is like the one time where you want the ball in Mahomes' court. You have to look at him and say, you are the one that needs to keep pace. Because if you're Josh Allen, just throw the rock. Khalil Shakir looks good. James Cook has been giving defenses headaches. And if I'm Josh Allen, put that defense in hell. Scramble. You know, like make them second guess everything. And I know they're going to get the calls, but if I'm the defensive coordinator, I'm taking a page out of the Commander's book, no offense, Mike, and saying Mahomes can scramble too. Treat him like a running back. You put your shoulder down and put it right in his sternum. And if you get the flag, that sucks. But hey, next time Mahomes might think twice. Every play Mahomes rolls out of the pocket, if I'm the defensive coordinator, I'm saying put him on his ass. Every play, you're going to make him feel it. I'm not going to say do some bounty gate nonsense like the Saints do, but make sure he's on the ground every play. Hurt him. That's what you got to do. And say, all right, Andy Reid, can you coach your way out of this? Because I'm not sold on their OC, Matt Nagy, not by any stretch of the imagination. But the way to beat Kansas City is to out-physical them. And I think Buffalo can. However, I'm going with Kansas City. Because I think Buffalo can, but will they? I don't trust Sean McDermott. I don't. I have been loud about my feeling that he's a numbskull. I have been very loud in the fact that he is to this Bills team what Doug Peterson was to the Super Bowl winning Eagles, where he's just kind of there. He's not going to help you, ooh, but he can hurt you. And that's the thing. Just I feel like he's just going to get outcoached. And I'm hoping that Josh Allen can drag his sorry carcass to the Super Bowl. But I just, it's like Brady. You don't bet against Mahomes, especially now that Mahomes has become the LeBron of the NFL. And I am exclusively talking about flopping.
I was going to say.
Flopping. Like, he's selling calls. Like, if you breathe on him, like, they're getting flags. And here's the thing, right? I know the Chiefs are in the middle of the pack when it comes to flags against them or flags against their opponents, but you got to remember one thing. Context is everything. These are flags that are coming in the fourth quarter. These are like game-deciding flags. And I know what you're going to say is, like, oh, well, don't leave the game in the hands of the refs, to which I say, bold of you to assume it's your choice. And that's the thing. And people are saying it's worse than the Patriots. As a Patriots fan, I can say yes, because I'll remember, because just remember this. The NFL made up a hoax to stop New England. They made up the Deflategate thing. And even people that I know, one of my buddies who's a Giants fan has literally said Deflategate was a hoax. I'm like, well, yeah, now that the Patriots aren't good anymore, people are starting to come around. So just remember this. The league tried to stop. New England was so good, the league tried to stop them from winning. Meanwhile, the league tries to help Kansas City win. Just remember that. Wins and dynasties are not created equal. One team the league was trying to stop, one team the league is actively trying to help. And I'm not even trying to blame the refs. I think if the Bills lose, it's going to be on Sean McDermott. I feel like it's going to be one of those games where the Bills get our hopes up and then Sean McDermott does something stupid. I'm going Kansas City.
But Sean McDermott is also from the Andy Reid tree of coaching too. So it's, yep. You know, he has a reason to want to beat Andy Reid too.
Oh no, he totally does. They all do. And honestly, I know Buffalo's got a chip on their shoulder. They said, you know, we're tired of being disrespected. But maybe if it were in Buffalo, I'd be more confident. But I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't trust McDermott. I just don't.
When the Bills beat the Chiefs earlier this year, that was in Buffalo, I believe, right?
Yeah, that was in Buffalo.
Yeah, I still think the Buffalo Bills can pull this off. You know,
no, again, I think they can.
Chiefs haven't scored 30 points this year. They haven't scored.
Actually, they
30
have against.
They are, but once again, like how many times do they beat them in the regular season and then just fall apart in the playoffs?
They have scored 30 points this year, but it's more of the stat that they haven't scored more than 30 points.
More than 30 points.
Yeah.
Still, but that's a stat that's important, especially for a team that Bills that put up a lot of points.
Oh yeah, but that's all the scheduled content. What was that, CJ?
I would say I think that it can be done. I just want to say I know it can be done, but let's be real. When you talk about the best head coaches in the league, odds are you're not talking about Sean McDermott. Nobody says he's in the cream. Even if the Bills win the Super Bowl, I'd be hesitant to call him in that cream of the crop of head coaches.
Yeah.
So
I have a question for the both of you guys. MVP of the league. I know there's a list. Saquon's on it. Josh Allen's on it. Who's your MVP of the league?
The stats show it probably should be Lamar. Although, statistically speaking, he does have more turnovers, not just interceptions. We're talking fumbles as well than Josh Allen. I don't know. The problem is that, like with the eye tests, Josh Allen does more with less, whereas Lamar, a lot of it opens up because of Derrick Henry.
Fair. That's fair.
Make it quick, CJ. I got to wrap this up. I got a haircut to get.
All right. I hate the MVP award so much. It's the MVQB. And if it were, and it's not stats based, which it should be, but if it were stats based, it'd probably go to Joe Burrow or even Saquon. Maybe Derrick Henry if Saquon didn't pop off, but I think it's going to end up going to Lamar Jackson just because, you know, more stats based. And also Lamar did beat them head to head in the regular season. That's important because the votes have already been tallied. And I want to remind all you at home, this is something everybody forgets. The MVP is a regular season award and it's going to go to a regular season quarterback. Give me Lamar.
I would have say Saquon because if he had beaten Eric Dickerson's record, it would have definitely been Saquon.
Oh,
but I'm leaning towards either like Lamar or Josh Allen at this point.
Agreed. But that's all the scheduled content that we have here today. Mike, thank you again for joining us. And if the Eagles make the Super Bowl, then I think we're going to have you come back on.
My pleasure. I'd love to come back and talk to you guys. It's always fun.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Like I said, we'll get in contact with you once we get to the Super Bowl, if the Eagles make the Super Bowl. If not, we're going to have you on at some point during the offseason as well.
100%.
That'll do it for us here for this Friday episode of the Film Brewski Podcast. We thank you for tuning in. New episodes coming out on Tuesday at 7:30, Fridays at 5, of course. And be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Be sure to follow our Instagram, FumbleRooski_podcast, to keep up with the pod and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, for myself, Chris Kostich, CJ Medeiros, special guest host from the Squawking Eagles podcast, Mike Wartenby, we'll say so long, and we'll see you on Tuesday.